Ferrari, McLaren, Alfa Romeo und Williams, das Teamchefkarussell in der Formel 1 hat sich über den Winter ziemlich stark gedreht. Einer war davon überhaupt nicht betroffen, das ist Christian Horner von Red Bull Racing. Er sitzt als Teamchef fest im Sattel. Und wie ihr unschwer erkennen könnt, sind wir bei Red Bull Racing in Milton Keynes. Christian Horner hat uns zum Interview eingeladen und ich würde sagen, lasst uns mal reingehen und ihn ein bisschen ausquetschen.
Christian, first of all, thank you for having us here with you at Red Bull
Pleasure.
In Milton Keynes. Christian, back in September, you decided against a cooperation with Porsche. Now you're entering in a cooperation with Ford. Why is Ford the better partner for Red Bull than Porsche?
Well, I think the discussions that we've had with Ford have been they've been extremely productive. There's been a real willingness from the senior management within Ford, from Bill Ford himself, to get back involved in Formula One. I think they recognize that the Red Bull powertrains, you have got all the specialist equipment and people. And so therefore, to come into a partnership with Ford, coming back into Formula One, an iconic brand with so much history in the sport, with no participation in the actual business itself in terms of a shareholding, but opening up their technology to us, was a very straightforward easy deal to conclude, because both parties wanted to make it happen.
Okay. Another partner you had or you still have is Honda. Why didn't you go for Honda in 2026?
Well, we have had such a great relationship with Honda, and that will continue until the end of 2025. But Honda announcing their withdrawal from the sport, we explored some options for 2026, if there was ways of them potentially being able to help us. But I think that it would just be very, very difficult to have half the engine, say, designed in Japan and half in the UK would be logistically very, very difficult to achieve. And so we had some exploratory conversations, but it was clear that, unfortunately, that we wouldn't be able to conclude something.
In which ways can Ford then help Red Bull powertrains from 2026 onwards?
Well, Ford is one of the biggest automotive manufacturers in the world. And of course, they're investing very, very heavily in their own EV range. And that is at the core of their expansion and development. So for us, with the new regulations for 2026, with the battery paying and the hybrid paying a much bigger role, almost 50% of the power coming from electrification, that for us, of course, to be able to draw on the experience and knowledge and know-how of an OEM like Ford, we feel bridges the gap between ourselves and the competitors that we're taking on, which of course are all subsidiaries of OEMs.
Yeah, and now you have a big OEM on your side to go against the big OEMs like Mercedes, Ferrari,
yes,
Renault. So was that kind of necessary for you?
I think strategically it was important for us. And I think in Ford, I think we've got the right partner with the right attitude. And, we're looking forward to it. So, a Red Bull Ford, it could be, Ford versus Ferrari all over again.
Yeah. Coming to the new season, you will celebrate your 50th birthday. I saw on the Las Vegas race weekend.
It's a good weekend to have a 50th.
Yes. How much would you bet on Max being champion by then?
Nothing. Look, we had an amazing season in 2022. I mean, it's only now when you look back at what we did, 17 victories, two sprint race victories, Constructors' Champion, Drivers' Championship. It was an unbelievable year. So if we achieve 50% of that in terms of race wins and points, it may well still be enough to win the championship. But of course, Ferrari had a very good car last year. They're going to come out fighting hard this year. Mercedes, I'm sure, will recover from their annus horribilis last year. So let's see. Let's see. I mean, the competitors are going to be very, very strong.
Who will be the bigger threat then, Mercedes or Ferrari?
I think both of them. I think we don't underestimate any of them. And, we've just got to focus on ourselves. And the team have been working hard over the winter months. RB19, hopefully we'll draw on all the positives that we had in RB18.
Do you see any other competitor being able to close the gap to you, to Ferrari, to Mercedes? Because last year there was kind of a 0.8, one second to Alpine.
Well, you never know. I mean, Alpine made progress in the second half of the year. Aston Martin, we keep hearing big numbers coming out of there in their expectations. So you just don't know in terms of, you know, what the running order will be. But yeah, McLaren maybe even, you know, get it together this year. So inevitably, the grid should, with stable regulations, start to, you know, close up.
You have kind of a handicap after the stuff with the budget cap. You don't have that much wind tunnel time as a defending champion. You have even less. How much of a handicap is that for the new season?
Well, of course, it is a handicap, but we're pretty much 25% through that penalty now. And it just forces the business to be more selective in what runs we put into the wind tunnel. So, you know, the team are doing a good job in managing that, but what effect it will ultimately have, we'll only see as the season unfolds.
Okay. Do you consider yourself still as the favorites because you won two championships in a row now with Max?
Well, I guess because of what we achieved last year, we'll go into the season with that title. But for me, it means nothing. I think that, you know, the favorite is whoever has the best car in Bahrain.
Okay. You mentioned that you have to be quite efficient with your wind tunnel runs, CFD, etc. Do you need more or less the perfect season with the handicap you are having now on the development side?
I think you've always got to be perfect to win in Formula One. You've got to, you know, particularly with how competitive the sport now is. So the team did an outstanding job, you know, last year, the technical team, particularly when you consider 2021, we came so late into the 2022 regulations, 6 months behind some of the other teams. Yeah. So I think the technical team, you know, have done an incredible job. And I think, you know, Pierre Vacher and his technical group will hopefully come up with a good car in 2019.
When did you start then now last season with the RB19?
Well, it's very much an evolution because certain amounts of the regulations are the same. Obviously, the underfloor has changed. Those regulations have changed. And so there's a hit on the downforce for all of the teams. So it was more evolution rather than revolution.
Okay. You mentioned the changes on the floor. It's quite a big one, I think, with 15 millimeters rising the floor edges. Do you see any concept, for example, the Mercedes, the Ferrari one, or the Red Bull one, which is more affected by it?
Again, I think we have to wait and see. Till the first snapshot will be the testing in Bahrain. I mean, it's a little bit strange because obviously there was a big push to get all of this changed. And the changes came through around Spa last year. But by the end of the year, there was very little porpoising.
Yeah. So, it doesn't seem to be really necessary to.
Which was my argument at the time, will it not just get sorted out, which it did. So we've gone through quite a lot of expense for all the teams in a big regulation change that probably wasn't needed.
Okay. How much different will be the RB19 compared to the RB18? Will we see it? Can we spot
you'll
the
see
differences?
A family resemblance. You know, you'll see for sure a resemblance because you know 18 was such a good car. It makes sense to continue some of that philosophy and evolve that philosophy into the 19.
Okay, so you still see big potential within the concept you have?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the car was still quite. Yeah, the regulations are still very immature. We're 1 year in, so I'm sure there's going to be more and more evolution.
Okay. Toto Wolff was mentioning from Mercedes, the team principal, that they might lack half a second of the start of the season, but they think they have big potential in their car to be able to close the gap. Yeah. Will it just be a development race again this season because the regs are still, let's say, quite new?
I mean, Mercedes did a lot of development last year, and you saw from where they started the year to where they finished, they're much, much more competitive. And they bought a lot of new parts, you know, particularly in the second half of the year. So we expect them to be competitive you've got two very strong drivers. So there's no reason to think that they won't be right there.
Okay. There is an engine freeze in place, but there are rumors all over the place that some engines will gain a lot of horsepower because you can make changes to the reliability. Mm-hmm. Is that really the case, or is this?
I think that yes, the engines are homologated, so theoretically there shouldn't be big horsepower gains, and also the fuel is homologated, so any reports of new fuels shouldn't be permitted. But of course, some teams, Ferrari had some reliability issues last year. So if they've managed to address that and through that been able to turn up their power, inevitably they will see some form of progress. Now,
is it something you're afraid of? Because if they really can gain, let's say, 10, 20 horsepower.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. So, we have to be mindful of that. We saw them turn down the power after their failures last year. So we know they have the ability within their engine to turn it up more.
Yeah. You have it as well with the Red Bull Honda
powertrain? We had some small reliability issues, but nothing to the magnitude of Ferrari.
Okay. There has been a lot of changes within the teams, different team principals, for example, at Ferrari. You're out now with Red Bull since more than, I think now it's 18 years from the very start. Have you ever been tempted to take another adventure, to take another team, for example, Ferrari?
To be honest with you, no, because I've been here since the very beginning. I feel very much responsible for the team. It's a great group of people. It's that I work with, and I think that I've never been tempted away. I feel a loyalty to Red Bull, and of course the people here. And when you're working with such a great team, why would you want to be anywhere else?
Okay, yeah, because Ferrari is the biggest team in Formula One, and some might be tempted to
take on this. It's hugely flattering to have been asked by Ferrari, but they're a great team, and I'm sure they're going to be very, very competitive.
Okay. Binotto is now on the market. Toto said there's no way that he could join Mercedes. Is it the same for Red Bull? Or?
I don't see what role he would perform. I mean, obviously it was tough for him last year with Ferrari because they did make a big step forward, but maybe there's other opportunities for him further down the grid.
Yeah. Is stability the biggest asset Red Bull has?
I think it's a crucial element. I mean, we have a very stable workforce here, and everybody knows what their job and role is and function is. And I think that is, for me, it's hugely important in part of what we've delivered, over the years. And when you look around, the senior positions in the team are largely unchanged for quite a period of time now.
But then there's a change in the, let's say, global activities of Red Bull with Oliver Minzlaff after the death of Dietrich Mateschitz. What changes with Oliver Minzlaff for the Formula One team? Are there any changes with him now?
I haven't felt any change, to be honest with you. Oliver obviously has an awful lot of projects under his responsibility. And I think obviously Formula One, or certainly Red Bull Racing, is probably one of his fewer headaches. He's been very supportive in the dialogue that we've had, and of course we also have the passion of the shareholders as well, who in both obviously Mark Mateschitz and the Udiva family, who Formula One has always been a big part of. They've always been hugely supportive.
Yeah, you had a very, very successful 2022 campaign, and everybody was speaking about Adrian Newey, the mastermind, because he was kind of foreseeing the bouncing issue everybody had. How big is he as an asset for Red Bull Racing, and how much involved is he still in the day-by-day business for the racing team?
Well, Adrian, over the last few years, has stepped back from day-to-day responsibility in Formula One. He splits his time between advanced technology and Formula One, but of course, he has an encyclopedia of knowledge. And what we've seen during the last couple of years, which has been fantastic, is the technical team has really stepped up, under Pierre's leadership, with Enrico Baldo and Ben Waterhouse and Craig Skinner. I believe it's the strongest technical team we've had. And that's enabled Adrian to go off and, first of all, do the Valkyrie project, and now, of course, the RB17, which is a big project that we announced halfway through last year. So of course, Adrian is still involved and there to be drawn on, but you know, not on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, so what does it mean? How many days a year does he work on the Formula One project, roughly?
I think it's impossible to quantify probably in days, but...
Or if you could give us a percentage, round, a rough one, that's...
Maybe 50% of his time is focused on Formula One. You know, he's in the office probably a couple of days a week on average, so... You know, it's difficult. It's impossible to put numbers. You know, it's like anything. When his attention is needed, he's there to be drawn on by, you know, by the technical group.
Yeah. Coming to the drivers, Max did an extraordinary season last year. He did a good, very good campaign in 2021, winning two championships in a row. Now, do you think he can still raise the bar, or is it now that he's on the very top of his?
I think at 25, he's still developing, he's still evolving. And I think, you know, 21, he was outstanding. 22, he managed to even better what he achieved in 21. And I think that's the exciting thing with Max, that as he gains experience, he's just become more rounded and versatile and just deals with pressure incredibly well. And I think what he's achieved has been phenomenal.
Is Checo the perfect number two for Red Bull?
I think Checo knows exactly what is expected from him. And I think being Max Verstappen's teammate is a pretty daunting prospect for any driver. But I think Checo has handled that very well. And of course, he was an integral part of us winning the Constructors' Championship and finishing a very close third in the championship, you know, last year, winning two Grand Prix. So, you know, Checo has he's evolved since he joined the team in 21.
Okay, so you don't see him really, challenging Max for, let's say, a championship?
I think over a season, the form that Max has been in is, of course, he's the man to beat. He's the reigning world champion. And Checo has to, you know, strive for that. Otherwise, you know, why is he competing? Yeah. But I think, you know, the reality is that, or the probability is that Max over the season is likely to be the more likely candidate for the world championship. But, you know, Checo should also, you know, he has the capability to also be right there. So, and we need both drivers performing at the best of their ability for the Constructors' Championship.
Okay. Do you see do you think Red Bull has the best driver pairing, or do you see another pairing on the level?
Look, I think we've got a great driver pairing. I think that if you look at Mercedes, they've also got a very strong driver pairing. Ferrari have got a strong driver pairing. So I think the top three teams, you know, are well-equipped driver-wise. It's a question of working as a team, you know, collectively.
Yeah. There was a lot of controversy about the budget cap you missed in 2021. And are you 100% sure now that you don't exceed it in 2022 because there is inflation, et cetera, which is...
You could never be 100% sure, but I think that, you know, certainly all the aspects that were a reason for us to be over in 21, which, remember, it was the very first year of a set of very complicated regulations. You know, we're confident that we should be comfortably within the cap. For 2022, the amount of development we did was, and particularly crash damage that we had, was significantly less than our two competitors. So, obviously, until you've got the certificate, nothing is 100%. But I'd be very surprised if we weren't, fully within the cap.
Okay, but it was kind of a very late call, let's say, by the FIA to tell you in October that you exceeded the budget cap. So was it really possible for Red Bull to adjust what to do within the cap?
At that point in time, of you know, 80% of the season is done. So, but there were some effects that were one-off effects regarding personnel and sick pay and so on that related to only 2021. So... when you remove those and make the adjustments on the other topics that were raised, I think, you know, we're happy with where our submission, you know, will be. But as I say, until you receive total conformity confirmation from the FIA, then you know, nothing is 100%.
When do you expect the confirmation this year?
I would hope earlier than October, but
yeah. Everybody,
you know, June, July, I would have thought would be a realistic target.
Yeah, it was a big effort, a massive effort for the especially the big teams, Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, yeah, to come below, yeah, the cap, to match the cap. Is there still some refinement which has to be done by Red Bull Racing, or are you satisfied now with the structure you have within the team? With the,
I think, you know, of course, the budget cap is a daily challenge, and now we have it in powertrains as well. But you know, we've had to move people from you know, high profile positions like, you know, Rocky, head of race engineering. You know, we've had to take the pain, and we've done that restructuring, of course, during 21, coming into 22, and a small amount of that again in 22. So I think structurally we're now equipped to deal with the cap.
Yeah. To give our users a number, how many employees does Red Bull Racing, the chassis side, has at the moment roughly?
About 800, 820.
Yeah. And the powertrain, Red Bull powertrains?
About 350, 360.
Okay. And you will... How many employees will you recruit for powertrains?
It really depends on how much manufacturing we do, but I think you're going to be looking at 450, you know, maybe 475, something like that. So to try and optimize your size within the regulations, of course, the challenge with powertrains is the diametric opposite of what we had with a chassis. So with a chassis, we had to go from a budget that was basically halved and reshape ourselves.
Yeah.
According to that size, with the engine, we're coming from a budget that, with an organization that from scratch. So we're shaping it around the budget cap.
Yeah. What is the bigger exercise, the bigger challenge? Come up with a new team, or you bought a team and then started with Red Bull Racing, or start with a powertrains manufacturing from the scratch?
I think both have their different challenges. Of course, in an existing team, you've got the base infrastructure, but the culture obviously needed to change, and certain aspects of how the team operated and some of the talent within the team needed to change. I think with powertrains, it's a startup. It's completely new. Every piece of equipment, every tool, every person there we've brought together from, you know, so many different companies and industries, and instilling our culture, the Red Bull culture, into that. You know, it's a different challenge on its own. So I think they've both got their pros and cons, but both equally significant.
Yeah, and you had to pay a lot of money for getting the powertrains factory.
I mean, the investment that Red Bull have made, and we have to thank Dietrich Mateschitz for that, as, you know, within his last business plan in September, committing to the investment that there is, you know, within Red Bull, not just powertrains, but also Red Bull Racing with wind tunnels and so on that are coming on site. You can see the campus that we have now, that is very much geared to the long term of Formula One.
Yeah, you mentioned the wind tunnel. You are having kind of an old wind tunnel at the, yep, moment. You are going to build a new one. Is it kind of a game changer? Is it really necessary for Red Bull to do that?
I think we've toyed with the decision for many years, and now there's a window of opportunity, and the regulations had the opportunity to close windows or diminish the use of wind tunnels. But they chose not to. So there's a window of opportunity to invest in a new tunnel. And of course, to have that tunnel on site, on campus, it feels like we've, and particularly where efficiencies now really come into play under the budget cap, the wind tunnel we have is sort of a relic of the Cold War. It's expensive to run. It doesn't work on days like today when the temperature is less than 5 degrees. So it has its limitations, whereas a state-of-the-art facility on campus within the allowance of what the budget cap has driven has almost dictated that we needed to make that investment to bring the wind tunnel on site.
When will it be ready, the new wind tunnel roundabout?
It'll be fully commissioned for 2025.
Okay. Sepp Vettel has a big history with Red Bull, yep, winning four championships. Do you see him somehow ending up in Red Bull, maybe with a new challenge for him here in the management, or is it impossible?
I don't think so. I can't see Seb doing a 9-to-5 job or moving to the UK. And I think there's so many other things in his life that he wants to do and achieve. And, you know, with his family, he's a little bit of a free spirit. And he has many projects that he's hugely passionate about. And I think there's certain things in Formula One, other than the driving, that obviously he felt conflicted about. So maybe to Formula One as an environmental advisor, there might be something, you know, that he can take and use his passion. But I think in the day-to-day operation of a team, I'd be very surprised if he were to get involved in that.
Okay. Coming back to the US market, as we mentioned at the very beginning, Red Bull joining forces with Ford, but there is another US player wanting to join Formula One, Andretti with General Motors, but there's a lot of resistance, it seems, within Formula One, especially from the team side. Why is that?
Well, I think, look, Andretti is a great team and a great brand, and Mario Andretti is synonymous again with Formula One, and Cadillac again, another great OEM, and it's fantastic that there's this interest in the sport. But I guess the key issue is, as with all these things, always boils down to money. So From our perspective, we would have absolutely no problem having an 11th team in Formula One. I think the key question is, though, is who is going to pay? Because if the teams are asked to pay for it, that is going to become a problem amongst the 10 teams. Yeah. I'd be amazed if all of the teams, and of course, there's two teams that are agreeing to it at the moment. One happens to be a partner of Andretti in IndyCar, and the other is likely to be supplying an engine. So it's obvious why they would support it. But I think for the other eight, the question will be is, you know, if it comes out of the percentage of prize fund that, you know, the 10 teams are currently dependent on.
But don't you think a big player like Andretti with General Motors in the back will bring more to the Formula One than they will receive?
It would have to bring an awful lot more. So it's a question for Liberty. I mean, if Liberty are happy to pay for it, to bring in that money, then I don't think anybody would have a problem. I think if people's budgets weren't going to go down, and it would be more sensitive for a smaller team than a bigger team, obviously, then I don't think there'd be any problem with it at all. It's nothing personal against Andretti or Cadillac. It's just business economics.
Because we ask ourselves, if not Andretti, Cadillac, who else could join Formula One as an 11th or 12th team?
You've got some teams in Formula One that, you know, Audi, for example, they acquired Sauber because they wanted to come in.
Yeah, but they buy an existing team.
But they buy an existing franchise. And I think that's the model that's been created by Liberty that's driven the value into those teams and those franchises. If you dilute that, Of course, they're going to have an issue. So if Andretti Cadillac wanted to come in there, of course, maybe teams further down the grid might have an interest in talking with them.
Yeah. But do you see the point? If not, player like them, like Andretti Cadillac with that name, General Motors, who else could then join Formula One? There's nobody, let's say an OEM won't do that, building up a team from scratch.
They can if they take on a franchise.
Yeah, but so, they won't. If they take on, but they will not bring an 11th team. Let's say.
Well, unless there's a new Concorde agreement coming up in 2026, would seem the juncture to deal with it rather than prior to that. You know, there's a commitment between now and the end of 2025. So if the 2026 says there's two new teams, so long as fiscally it doesn't harm the existing teams, I can't see anybody being against it. But of course, it's like, if somebody were to ask you, there's a couple more writers that are going to come in. They're really talented and they're great names and so on. But you're going to have to take a 20% pay cut to pay for them. Would you be happy with that?
No, I wouldn't. But that's what I said. I think they...
So that's the fundamental problem of who pays.
Yeah, but that's what I said. I think, well, most of the people think they can bring more than they really...
I think the other thing is logistically, operationally, how does it work? So, you know, I'd love to see the Andretti brand in Formula One. You know, arguably it brings more than some of the existing franchises. But the fundamental question comes back to, are the teams funding it? Is Formula One funding it? Because the one that isn't is the FIA, because they will only get more entry fees. And
you had to pay quite a high amount this year.
Et cetera. So I think it's a bigger discussion that needs to be held collectively between the stakeholders.
Yeah. Very last question. Which Grand Prix you're most looking for the 2023 season?
For the 2023 season? I think there's so much expectation around Vegas. I hit a milestone in my own life in Vegas. And so I'm fascinated by that race. I think it's going to be an incredible event. I've never seen demand, interest, and excitement about a Grand Prix like there is in Las Vegas.
All right. Thank you very much, Christian, for taking time.
Thank you.
Red Bull und Ford spannen sich also zusammen und kooperieren ab 2026, wenn in der Formel 1 ein neues Motorenreglement greift. Und wie ich finde, hat Christian Horner uns nicht nur schöne Einblicke zu dieser neuen Beziehung gegeben, sondern auch eben auf die kommende Formel 1-Saison mit uns vorausgeblickt. Wenn euch das Interview mit Christian Horner gefallen hat, dann lasst uns doch ein Like da. Und natürlich würden wir uns über jedes Abo von euch freuen.